The text you have before you is the fifth conference of John Cashin on the eight principal vices, or the eight deadly thoughts, a tradition which Cashin received from his master Evagrius. This text from the conferences is a later work of Cashin's. Much earlier, he had written the Institutes, which we will be studying in detail, in which he goes over each of the eight principal vices in the same order in which he lists them here, and describes many aspects of them and gives examples from his experience as a desert father. But this conference is his later in life return to the older theme, attempting to remind himself and his readers of the significance of these vices, perhaps to remind them that they still remain active in a person's life, even after they've undergone great spiritual maturity, because the conferences are primarily written, at least in theory, for hermits, for people who are very advanced in the spiritual life, and whose primary goal and focus is the subject of Christian contemplation. And in this conference, we experience again Cashin, like so many of the Desert Fathers, especially Evagrius, showing himself to be a masterful psychologist, someone who is interested in the details of how the experience of temptation and the resisting of temptation actually works in the human heart. What are the sins to which we are subject first? What do they lead to? How do we most customarily turn away from God? How can we see that within ourselves, learn from it, and then in learning from it, rely on the grace of God and enable God to be present with us in our withstanding of those vices? So we'll find him turning to these various themes, the interrelationship between the vices, distinctions among them, characteristics they have, and the absolute necessity for relying on grace. And we'll see as a key emphasis the necessity for discretion or discernment or caution in not going overboard in engaging in a religious practice which is meant to oppose a particular vice. He particularly recommends that one be careful and cautious in one's use of fasting, and that discipline be moderate. And as we'll see, he also reminds us that each individual needs to seek out what is their primary failing and where do they discover themselves beginning the kind of cascade or downfall into turning away from God in their own hearts and in their own minds. Cashin is inviting those who read this work to themselves learn about their own interior experience of sin and of grace and to make use of it, beginning with the thoughts. He's speaking of the vices, but one can say that although that term technically means something that has been repeated in action so that it becomes habitual, he's also using it in a vagarious sense of a particular kind of temptation, something that occurs first in the mind and where it can be properly understood and fought before it ever is carried out in practice. I've divided this chapter, this conference, into 10 subsections, and each of those sections is marked by a horizontal bar, which is blue in color, and they're each numbered. And we'll be moving very quickly through the subsections so that I can just highlight particular themes that I think it would be helpful for you to note as you read through this text in your own time and at your own pace. If we drop down to chapter 2, just before the first blue bar, notice that his listing of the order of the vices is the same as what we encounter in Evagrius. First, gluttony, then fornication, or sexual immorality. Third, avarice. Fourth, anger. Fifth, what I've translated as gloominess, tristitia, which can mean sadness, but again, we want to emphasize that this is not just being sad or depressed, it's actively cooperating with a spirit of negativity and desiring and continuing to act as if things are meaningless and making that kind of thematic in your life. Acedia, which he describes as listlessness or low spirits, vainglory or boasting, and then pride. This is his ordering of the thoughts. Now, in section 1 that has that blue bar, the distinction between natural or carnal vices and spiritual ones, Cashin here makes a distinction which is noted earlier and carried out throughout the Middle Ages, that in particular the vices of gluttony and lust and well, particularly gluttony and lust, are something that happen within us, whereas there are things that primarily act outside of us. And that he even distinguishes between the way that they act. He makes a fourfold distinction in the way these actions can take place. And he then goes over a kind of a gentle review of how one can discover remedies, particularly for the first two passions of gluttony and fornication. He's going to be concerned in this early section between the carnal or natural vices, the vices that are primarily experienced because of either bodily necessity or bodily impulse, and that will primarily be gluttony and lust, and the other, what he describes as spiritual vices or failings. If we drop down now to the horizontal bar number 2, Christ, the archetype of victory over temptation, here we see that, like Evagrius before him, Cassian is using the example of Jesus' temptation in the wilderness as an example of how Christ overcame temptation as a kind of a heroic, royal model for us to imitate. And as we'll see, Evagrius particularly recommends that we do what Christ does in answering back the temptation with a word from the Scriptures. That's Evagrius' tradition of the anti-rheticos, having memorized Scripture verses that can be used in moments of temptation. Cassian doesn't specifically recommend that, but he does recommend that one use the example of Christ in the wilderness as a reminder of and even example of what we can become that is strong in faith and able to withstand temptation. If we drop down towards chapter 7 and horizontal bar, blue bar number 3, the unique characteristics of the 6 spiritual vices, he's already covered gluttony and lust in the earlier 6 chapters. He now turns to what he regards as the unique and specific characteristics of the other 6 tempting thoughts. And again, I will leave you to read this on your own. But notice in section 4, that is to say, where you come to horizontal bar number 4, which is just before chapter 10, he points out, and again following from Evagrius, that the vices do cascade into, and I've described it here, and they reinforce one another. There's a kind of a natural flow, which he describes in 10.1, and you can see how it's numbered there. From having too much food in gluttony, somehow that leads into, and this is a common medieval a conviction, that eating too much food tends to make a person prey to sexual temptation, and that itself somehow leads one or makes one open to be more subject to being tempted by the desire for things outside of the self. That can lead to anger, especially when one doesn't get what one wants. That can lead to gloominess, a sense that life has no meaning, and that can naturally lead into acedia. So he's describing a kind of a natural cascading or flowing of the vices, but as we'll see, he doesn't regard this as absolute. Each person has to discover how this happens within themselves. If we move to section 5, that blue bar 5, subtypes of the 8 vices in chapter 11, you'll see that here he, like even Aristotle before him, wants to distinguish between the different aspects of each of these vices. And so in chapter 11, he gives us 3 kinds of gluttony. And then on in 11.4, he goes on to describe different types of fornication, and so on with the other vices as well, or at least the other spiritual vices. He makes a point in 12, which he takes again from Evagrius, that sometimes vainglory or can be a useful thing if we allow ourselves to think, well, I'm better than committing that kind of a lowly or base kind of sin, that in some cases we may be able to withstand one temptation by even allowing the more problematic aspects of another temptation temporarily to be present. This was regarded as a very problematic and dangerous recommendation by later spiritual authors, particularly by John Climacus, but Cassian does repeat it here. In number 6, the horizontal bar, blue bar number 6, discover and identify your own deepest, fiercest weaknesses. That's the subject of chapters 13 and 14. He here reminds us that although he's distinguished between and described this cascading of vices, every person has to discover what their own deepest struggle is, because the vices don't always proceed in the order that he's described. They may have a unique movement within each individual heart, and each person needs to discover what that is for them. In horizontal bar number 7, he talks about relying on grace, something that he's already talked about in chapter 14 and that he now develops even more in chapter 15, that once we discover what our forms of failing are, it's not just a matter of suddenly standing up and withstanding on our own merits or on our own strength. We can't do that. We must depend upon God. We have to make prayer and a reliance on grace the absolute basis, the absolute fundamental of everything we do in this struggle. And then dropping down several chapters below to number 8, he speaks of gluttony as the basis of the other vices. And if we continue on even further down, in number 9, he points out that even though gluttony is the beginning, our fasting should be moderate. We have to employ the spiritual remedy that actually works, not that drives us into a kind of either despair because we can't keep up that discipline, or an elation in pride because we're doing it so well. Spiritual disciplines, asceticism, has the goal, ultimately, of leading us into the kingdom of heaven, but its immediate purpose is to overcome these vices, and so we have to be careful. We have to be moderate in our use of these practices. Then dropping down finally to number 10, he says that even though we talk about gluttony as being the first of the sins, nevertheless, for some people, pride may be the place where this kind of spiritual descent or cascading downwards happens. And Cashin is being very wise at this point. He's recognizing that different people at different stages in their spiritual journey and with different temperaments may be primarily tempted in different ways. And they need to learn where their primary temptation is and how this cascade or flow of problematic reactions tends to happen in them. And we'll continue in the next section with seeing how this tradition is modified in the medieval tradition of Gregory the Great.